Say it's an honor to be here. I always enjoy being a part of 1848 sessions, whether it's in the audience, and I'm particularly honored to be a part of the program. So I find it interesting that I'm following Dr. Baum because I think there's some of our conclusions that are very similar, but part of me as I was wrestling with this issue was if we can agree that social justice is at minimum justice for all on a societal scale, then perhaps even if we get to mastery around social determinants of health, that in itself might be a co-optation of social justice. So I want to spend my next few minutes with you sort of exploring some of that idea and maybe proposing how we might think a little differently about what it would mean if our work actually was to achieve social justice, as opposed to simply addressing injustice. So, and also just sort of interrogate for a minute what we mean when many of our agencies say we have a social justice framework, right? So I'm gonna start. Like, what does that mean? And I know as someone who travels the country and works with a lot of health departments and work with a lot of folks, I hear a lot of different stories, but they seem to fall along some, you know, sort of a continuum. So I want to sort of play with that. So let's see, if I do this, will it go forward? No. Yeah, actually, okay, this is better for me.
Okay.
So. So I don't know if you can, there, that's big enough. You can read that. I was a little worried about it at 3 o'clock in the morning when I was working on this. That it might not be seen. So part of it is how we look at this is whether it's a problem orientation or we're looking at actual transformation, right? Most of the work and the way we think about it oftentimes is rooted in this idea of addressing injustice, mostly actually not even injustice, inequality, and sometimes inequity. And so we're trying to figure out, you know, how do we look at, so we have data that shows problems, we're looking at addressing disparities, which, and we're trying to even up the disparities so that there's parity, you know, or we may move to environmental conditions, which are important, and trying to figure out how to address those. And we even get down to a certain kind of metric in terms of like, and I thought it was interesting, like what does it mean to be 12 years behind? And where are we going? So there's this interesting metric, right, that deals with that. And then as we move up the continuum, some of us are moving into looking at oppression and domination. How do we understand that? But part of what I want to argue for is what does it mean to talk about actually transforming society for social justice and what might practice look like? So you're with me? Everybody's awake? Very good. Okay. So let's go. So this is where I want to spend most of my time. So these are ideas about fulcrums and work that we can begin to work on, and I'll get into some examples in a minute. So we have one part, which is sort of the obvious piece, is how do we share power? You know, but one of the things that we learn, and one person that I really love their writing, and I know many of you are very familiar with them, Iris Marion Young, the late Iris Marion Young, who wrote this great book, you know, what is it? I'm going to, Justice and the Politics of Difference, that's what it was. And one of the things she talks about in that book, which I think is really critical, is getting beyond our understanding of justice as simply something that's distributed, right? So it's like we have to understand the part that's about distribution, but we also have to understand the parts that's about understanding domination, understanding oppression, understanding the past. And the past is really critical, and a lot of times in our conversations about our social justice framework, we're not always looking at past. And the roots of some of these relationships, right? So how do we understand that? How do we talk about sharing power? What does the framework look like? What do the structures look like? How do they change? How do we understand what are problems and what are needs? How do we set benchmarks for just outcomes and the just sort of redistribution and allocation of resources? But also, how do we begin to advance an alternative vision that's not just grounded in the problem orientation? So let's look at that. So here's some examples, and I wanted to give some concrete examples for our discussion that's right within our reach. So one process, of course, that many of us are familiar with but don't necessarily get a chance to practice as much as we'd like to, is participatory budgeting, right? How do we actually make transparent how resources are allocated? What are the formal venues for shared power and decision making? You know, the commissions, the advisory groups, how do we start to retool governance and structure? How do we think about how money is collected? Right? How do we, you know, there's great ideas like land valuation and how we rethink how land is valued, how money's collected on it, how to shift the sort of energy from people making money from speculation to the more that you use land for the good of the common, you know, the less you pay taxes. So how do we begin to think about structures that reward this kind of engagement? How do we have an equity and justice lens? What are our benchmarks? And how do we imagine benchmarks that are beyond the reduction of disease? Which is hard because that's what we're funded to do. Right? And so how do we begin to stretch that out and open that up and begin to think about that? And then part of it is how do we engage in sort of the training and development, as Dr. Baum talked about, that helps people be able to engage in this practice, not only in terms of the staff, in terms of staff, but also leadership development and stakeholders throughout the continuum. And then land is really critical, right? Land, property is really critical to the way these relationships are constructed today. And a lot of times our work in public health stops at zoning, when it's much more critical and much more rooted than that, right? So how do we understand that history? How do we even understand how the position of space is as a result of conquest, as a result of colonialism, post-colonialism, pre-colonialism, wherever you want to go with it, slavery? You know, how do those things get organized? And then we come in as workers into this sort of organized space and not necessarily paying attention to how that plays out. And then we essentially try to have what old folks may say, new food in old pots, right? You gotta scrub the pots out or the food is nasty, right? So, and then how do we understand these patterns and how does it inform how we advance justice? How do we think about participation? And also, how do we integrate interventions that are about transformation? So what does it mean to have human rights in our health practice? How do we apply even basic conventions, which is a movement that many of us are starting to embrace, like we're looking at these conventions. How might the Convention to Eliminate Racial Discrimination apply to our work? How might CEDAW and other kinds of conventions apply to our work? And then part of it is, where do we get the space to imagine and unpack in communities what that looks like? Keep moving. We talked about data. We talked about data collection and disaggregation. One thing we like is equity impact statements. How do we think about shared power and decision making? But also, how do we balance and really elevate and respect indigenous knowledge? Knowledge that's not in necessarily what we consider sort of formal form, and how does that become formalized? How does it become respected and integrated in that way? But also, how do we help advance stories and strategic communications that make these problems and these solutions visible? Because a lot of times we're in a battle with the right about the possibility of our vision. And so we have to engage it, and we have to not only do research, we have to tell stories. I'm almost done. And so what does it mean about education? What does it mean about training for transformation? How do we build a learning community that builds knowledge of the alternatives? Much of the great work is happening outside of the US. How do we get access to that? How do we engage? And it's really hard because a lot of the funding for learning is cut. You know, a lot of the travel for us where we work, it's hard for us to go places, it's hard for us to start to learn from other people, but fortunately there's the internet, which is not the same. But it's better than it was 15 years ago. You just wouldn't know, right? So how do we develop those kind of alternatives, right? How do we, again, value knowledge all along the continuum? And how do we support training and development that allows people to collaborate across the continuum? Okay, and I think this might be my last slide. Let me see. And then part of that training and education is about how do we create this intersectional, sort of quote-unquote cross-disciplinary democratic space. You know, and we have to learn how to do that because it's hard. You know, those community people, they'd be asking you for stuff you can't give them. They'd be arguing with you, being difficult, right? It's hard. And we need to have skills to learn how to do that. Many of us are doing organizing projects with no organizing experience, no organizing training. We're asked to do outreach, no support, no education. You know, sometimes doing work, we don't even speak the language. You know, just, you know, we're in environments where we're like talking loud to people, right? Instead of, you know, and I see it all the time, well-meaning people, people who are committed to justice, without the skills or capacity to really engage in, you know, sort of principled collaboration with folks. And then again, how do we support those pilots? How do we increase support of what works to go to scale? And how do we create these learning communities that are not hierarchical, which is hard, you know? But they happen, and there's places we can learn from them. So look at that. This is the last slide. So I want to close. This is a overused, from not a really great guy, actually, quote. But a quote that sums it up. That, you know, this work that we do, it is difficult. Many of you in this room have started to try to do it. We have to talk more explicitly about this work of transformation. And create the space where it's okay to have conversations about what that looks like. We have to be willing to sort of imagine and talk about alternatives and not be scared of like the C word or the S word. You know, I won't even say them, you can just imagine what I mean, right? Or whatever that is that helps us to begin to dream and think about a place where we all can belong and this really can work beyond the problem orientation. And the last thing I want to close with is a plug for a website of ours that's relatively new. That's the URL up there. And we actually have a new study that looks at mainstreaming in the UK and some of the lessons around how we might apply it or how folks are stepping away from race as a result of it and just sort of the complicated things that are going on there among some other international lessons. So I want to encourage you to go on the site. I want to encourage you, hopefully, for us to continue this conversation. And thank you.